Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Jaguars This Week. Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Caller analyst, Jeff Lagerman. And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Welcome, and good night. Wishful thinking.
We gonna sign off already?
Well, I don't know about you. Actually, I do know about you. I'm full.
Me too.
Osh just walked in with some sort of a wrap from some sort of a deli, and he missed the fact that Loggy has been in here slaving for you, frying venison, cube steak venison, no less.
Wild Game Wednesday.
I made the famous sweet potato casserole. His wife made a ooey gooey sticky butter cake.
Yep.
That is, you'll hate it. Don't touch it.
Well, I will put the.
You are not entitled.
And don't say what I brought in. Don't say what I brought in. We'll get in trouble.
Joe brought in grape juice.
Bricks. He brought in bricks.
We're building bricks.
We got a little.
It's a Thanksgiving feast.
Pepsi Wild Cherry from Joe, and a little sweet tea, and some
there you go.
Red Hot and Lulu's hot sauce.
So
very nice, Joe.
At the break, Osh, feel free to join us.
I mean, I definitely will.
Part of the game now, so you got to understand that this is a Thanksgiving tradition. What did you bring?
I just brought some water.
Okay, good. It's nice to see you. Thanks, appreciate it.
I'm a taker, not a giver.
Are you?
Yeah.
We might try to change that about you in the future. And Joe, how are you?
Hey, at least Johnny's not a liar.
Thanks, taking.
By the way, since he is generally well-regarded in this area for having won two championships with the University of Florida, and you bring up liar, did you see Pete Prisco's tweet about Urban Meyer?
I did not, but I know I'm going
to
hear it.
Called him Urban Liar.
Yeah.
Because the word today is that there's a big deal for him to go to Ohio State. Was there ever a medium more perfectly suited for one man than Pete Prisco on the internet?
He,
where he can be himself 24/7.
He certainly he shows no qualms about bashing. I once joked with him that while we were on the beat from 95 to about 2000 together, and when the Jaguars got close in 98 or 99, I always used to joke that if they won the Super Bowl, his lead would be the Jaguars won the Super Bowl and rushed for 50 yards, again raising questions about the team's running game. And I think Loggeman, having been covered by Pete for 3 or 4 years, would agree with that.
Oh, yeah, that's Pete.
Appreciate that for sure. Our phone number this evening, because the phone lines are open, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. At John Osher, at Jags Boys. We'll pass the thoughts along to Jeff. Many of you are in the car, out traveling around. Please be safe this Thanksgiving holiday. Enjoy it. And if you feel the need, take a deep sigh. Push back from the table for just a minute.
Well, we're in prep mode. See, that's what today is all about. See, and we were talking to Roland Isabel, who works in Jaguars marketing department.
He's in prep mode.
And he was in prep mode as well. And he said, look, the real experts know how to treat Thanksgiving. A lot of people save up the day before, and then the day of, they just get out of control. The real secret is to prep.
Stretch,
and the days leading up to Thanksgiving. Stretch the stomach a little bit.
I'm fully prepared.
And then that way, when you hit Thanksgiving Day, it's not a shock to the body.
And then you're ready for Christmas.
That's right. Then you just keep on rolling all the way into December.
Now, was that Georgia deer? Was that Florida deer? Where did you get that deer?
That's Georgia deer, and courtesy of my good buddy Gary Tillman at Tillman's Meat Market. Right. He cubed it up, and it was absolutely wonderful. And there's a few pieces left, only because the ones that came in here, me and Joe were hollering at them. One piece max.
Right. It won't be here by the time we get to the break, I guarantee you. That is
probably
delicious.
Won't be.
So, if you'd like to join us, again, you have the phone numbers. We're talking turkey, we're talking Jaguars, and Military Appreciation Day on Sunday. Do we know what the flyover is? You know?
They're actually keeping that kind of a secret. It's going to be big. I mean, Kurt Weisenbaugh always does a great job, and he's probably going to outdo himself. So.
And he generally tells you what it is.
It would pay to be here.
So, there's some seats available. 633-2000. Jaguars.com.
Yeah. They can call us, and I'll tell them what the number is.
Really? So you guys want to talk about clock management, play calling? Where do you want to go? Huh?
How about Tim Tebow?
You could go either way on that one.
I know.
I mean.
We got hit over the head with it last night on Jack's show. It's been the topic in the ozone, I'm sure, all week long. That's
It's come up. I went after it in the Logavision segment of Jaguars All Access. He hit it right there knowing. And I think during the broadcast there at the end of the first half, I thought that the management was not very good. I thought it was real conservative at the end of the first half, that they were, I think, worried about letting the Browns have the ball back. And I think you can't really take that approach, even though you have a young quarterback and an offense that's trying to find its way. You got to go.
Well, what was notable, what was really notable about that, Jeff, is that, the Browns clearly had no thought that the Jaguars could go the length of the field.
They used a timeout.
When you're calling timeouts, it was very unusual to see a team call timeouts in the situation the Browns were calling them in. And, I guess in a retrospect, they were right.
No, I was shocked by it. I mean, and at the very end there, 4th and 7, I believe it was, 4th and 6, and they could have tried a field goal there, which would have been 57, 58 yards. 15 seconds left on the game clock. The Browns had no timeouts. To me, I think you approach that one of two ways. If you feel like 57 or 58 is long, because it is Cleveland, the weather's never perfect, then you go for it, hoping that you can get one play to the boundary to get a closer field goal opportunity. And if you don't have that approach, then you try the long field goal, and Scobie wanted to do it. He was pointing up at the flags, saying, hey, look, the wind's blowing in that direction, and then try it. Because, 15 seconds, if you kick the field goal, 4 seconds probably would have came off the clock, so Cleveland would have had it, 10, 11 seconds left on the clock, no timeouts. You've got a good defense. Play defense at that point.
There are four or five teams in the league against which you probably wouldn't do it the way you just said it. If you're playing, Brady or Rodgers, somebody like that.
Peyton Manning,
I've seen many times teams do that against Peyton, and he throws 25-yard pass, you're kicking a field goal. But in this case, with it being Colt McCoy and the Browns,
go for it.
Your risk was pretty limited. I would agree with you there. I don't agree with you on the end of the game.
Well, we'll get to that after the break. But I mean, we're in agreement there.
Sure.
But to me, I mean, Joe had mentioned this, I believe, Monday night on the Gene Smith show, Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, that Josh Scobie did come out after halftime, and he put the ball exactly where the spot would have been.
Thanks for listening, Lux.
Prior to the end of the half, I'd like your commentary, Joe. It was very nice. And Scobie did try one from that exact spot, and he fell short. But in practice or practicing coming out after halftime, the adrenaline's not flowing
right
like it is during a game. I mean, at that point, do you have the adrenaline? Do you have, the fire to say, I'm going to crush this ball?
Yeah, many
probably
readers
not.
In the ozone this week, Joe.
Okay, really, you guys just like the sound of the cash.
Wrote it off as a no-brainer decision, as if, that was a kick Scobie makes in his sleep. It wasn't that extreme. And, there was some thought that had to go into it. But as you said, Jeff, I think if you don't kick the field goal, which I don't have a big problem with not kicking the field goal, but I'm not sure that there's much of a reason not to at least try a play downfield, get an interference, get a closer opportunity.
Hey,
the officials were calling plays in that game, you might have gotten the interference.
I apologize for not listening. Shame on me. I was on the phone. But did you guys mention, though, that before we went to the half, Scobie was telling Jack, he was pointing at the goalpost saying, hey, the wind is
don't know exactly what he was saying, but it gave the impression he was looking up at the flags and that were flying at the top of the stadium, saying the wind's blowing in that direction.
The post he was kicking to, the flag wasn't moving at all, but the one at his back was blowing toward the other goalpost, so it looked like he did have the wind.
He didn't tweet anything about that, did he?
Well, and he did a wise job in not tweeting about that. Tweeting about DeSean Jackson doesn't have the consequences of tweeting about whether you wanted to kick one.
True.
So
true that.
We'll get to the end of the game after the break.
Let's do it. Break time, folks. You can call 355-NFL1. Hey, beginning Sunday, the Jaguars are implementing a new procedure to help ensure fan safety when you attend a Jaguar game here at Everbank Field. The magnetic wand is a non-invasive device that scans the body for prohibited items. Fans are encouraged to arrive at the stadium at least 15 minutes earlier than normal, as the new screening process will take longer. Your patience and assistance is appreciated in working through the process to identify the safest and most efficient manner to welcome guests to Everbank Field. For more information, visit Jaguars.com. And we return with more Jaguars This Week right after this on Jaguars Radio. You can become a part of the Jaguars Advantage program, a new fan loyalty program with Jaguars Advantage. Season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to Jaguars.com. Wait, JaguarsAdvantage.com. All right. Do you guys want to continue the conversation about time management?
Yeah, we can go to the end of the game.
All right, let's do it. What's going on, bro? I'm
trying to figure out this beeping sound that's...
Willow,
we blew up a few outlets in here trying to get the deep fryer going, yeah, and the electronics are going crazy.
A few beeps.
Hey, there'll be people that'll be having all kinds of problems at home tomorrow. You know,
that's right.
With their turkey, with their fryer, hopefully not. So let's fast forward then, because you suggested that you disagreed with Logs at the end of the game.
You know, and I've been getting hammered on this in the Ozone all week, and it's understandable. I didn't have a big problem with them not calling timeout in that situation simply because the offense needed to get to the line of scrimmage more quickly. If the offense gets to the line of scrimmage more quickly, you have the option of run pass twice on first down and then again on fourth down. And I could certainly see the argument that in retrospect, considering the way this team has run the two-minute drill all year, there was not a big body of work to suggest that they would have gotten to the line of scrimmage quickly. But in theory, that's why they did it that way. And I was blogging during the game and said that it was the right move. And, you know, in theory, I will stick with that.
Yeah, and see, I'm okay with them hurrying to the line of scrimmage after they converted the third and one and running a play. But they had to huddle to do it. And they had a motion involved with the first down play.
Right.
So...
those two things were clearly errors.
When the play ended on the first down run, there were 35 seconds left on the game clock. At that point, you could have used a timeout.
Right.
You didn't. On the next play, the first down play, the ball was snapped at 13 seconds.
Correct.
That's 22 seconds off of the game clock, which would have bought you one more opportunity.
Right.
And I agree with you, but if you're not ready to have two plays called or to have another play ready to go instantly,
right,
you must use your timeout to ensure that you get four opportunities, which they weren't.
Right.
Use the timeout because you still have the run-pass option at that point by doing the same thing at that point, and that's having two plays called, have a pass play, have a run play followed up with it. And then you could have gotten a little more organized at that point once you made the first down.
Right. The problem is you must be better prepared in that situation.
Yes.
One way or the other.
Yes. You cost yourself a down, an opportunity at a win. And going back to the end of the first half, and hey, look, 57-58-yarder is not a gimme like you said. But if you had made that, then at the end of the game, a field goal wins it.
And unfortunately... that's been, you know, that is not an isolated incident this year.
No. And that to me, that was unacceptable at the end of that game. I mean, that's, you got to be better than that. You got to be more, seem to be more prepared than that to be able to rock and roll. And I know that they were in a personnel grouping on the third and one, which was Greg Jones, Maurice Jones-Drew, and then Mercedes Lewis, as well as the other tight end,
Zach Potter,
and which is, they call that 22 personnel.
Right.
22 personnel is two tight ends, two backs. 21 would be two tight ends, one back. They're in 22 personnel. And so that's not the personnel grouping typically that you have a no-huddle offense ready to rock and roll with. You know, so my whole thing is if you went to that 22 personnel, you know, two tights, two backs, to run a play, and you know you don't have the ability to run no huddle, then you got to use it. You got to use the timeout.
355-NFL1, 800-355-6351. Let's grab our first call of the night. We'll go to the west side where Tony is standing by. Tony, happy Thanksgiving. Welcome to the Jaguars All.
Hey, guys.
Getting every show.
All
Jaguars All Access, Jack Del Rio Show.
Just
Jaguars
welcome
this week. Yeah, welcome. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Just
want to,
first of all, I want to thank the Jaguars for everything that they do for the vets. I spent 21 years in the Navy, and I've got some other family members that are still in the military, and we just appreciate everything that the Jaguars do for us, especially around Veterans Day and so forth, and the show that they put on every year during the Veterans or during the Military Appreciation Game is really awesome. And that's one of the reasons why I'm a longtime season ticket holder and plan to hold on to them for a long time to come.
Thank you.
Good to hear.
Certainly appreciate it.
Tony, you're right on the money. I mean, as far as the things that they do to recognize and show appreciation to military, whether it be during commercial timeouts, before the game, halftime, are second to none. And we get a firsthand look at all the other teams around the National Football League, you know, over a number of years to see how they do it. And nobody does it as good as it, that's being done right here in Jacksonville.
We're excited for Sunday. Joe says you've got another thought.
Yeah, I do. I just want to have a really quick shout-out to the Middleburg Broncos. They won the national championship title, football championship in American youth football last year, and they're going down next week to try and repeat.
Good luck to them.
Seventh grade football team, as well as we have three cheerleading squads that took first place in regionals and will be competing in nationals the weekend of the 10th of December. So just wanted a real quick shout-out to the Middleburg Broncos out there to bring home a few more national titles this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you guys greatly, and we'll see you on Sunday.
You got it, Tony. Thank you very much. 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. About 4 minutes left before we break here at the bottom of the hour. Anything else you want to clean up from the Cleveland game?
Well, I mean, just the disappointment of it. I mean, Boy, that was a tough one to swallow. And, you know, John had made mention of that, you know, common occurrence or happened too often. You know, the Cincinnati game wasn't smooth at the end. The Carolina Panther game mm-hmm. wasn't very smooth. You know, and to me, I mean, I look at those as three lost opportunities. You know, and if you flip that and say, okay, you know, we won those three games, you're looking at getting right back into the hunt for the division title.
You're a game out with the division leader coming in.
Yeah, a chance to, you know, get a tie, take the lead. You know, a lot could still happen at 5-5 or 6-4.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be playing the Houston Texans, the division leaders, who just lost their starting quarterback for the year at your place.
And it just goes to show how important the details are in the NFL, because there are seven games a year, they're going to be decided by 4 points. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. It's the way the league is set up. And, you know, you have to get little situations right.
Well, and I didn't like what I read, because I didn't hear it. The post game with the coach, and kind of said talk to Dirk Cutter. You know, I looked at the plays, and I don't have any problem with those three plays.
Yeah, Jack on Monday, you know, diffused that a little bit. I don't know that was as much, you know, calling Dirk out the way it was interpreted. I got to the press conference late, so I did not hear him say it. My understanding is he was asked a question about the play calling at the end, and, you know, it wasn't so much a negative statement as it was, you know, the offense. If you want details on that, you have to talk to the coordinator. And, you know, again, I wasn't there, so I don't know the tone of it, but that seemed to be the gist of what he said Monday.
Well, the reason I think that people took it in the way that they did was because it wasn't the first time it's happened
sure.
this year.
Sure, no. And I wrote this week, you know, it's best just not to mention the coordinator in the postgame, because no matter what, rightly or wrongly, in that situation, it's the head coach's game.
Well, because if I'm right, reading the Ozone, there were a lot of people that came in and said, hey, you're the head coach.
Sure.
You can push the button and say, this
right.
is what
Right, and
I
that's
want.
Always going to be the, you know, no matter what the behind-the-scenes stuff is, at that moment, it's, as Jeff said, it's we.
Yeah. Well, and the power of perception is so strong, especially in this media.
And I think in this case, it was more perception than reality.
Yeah. Well,
but it's going to be perceived the
difficult.
Other way. Sure, yeah.
All right, folks, we've hit the bottom of the hour. And you are certainly welcome to join us here on this Thanksgiving Eve, if there is such a thing. It's Brian, Jeff, John, and Joe. And we are here until 8 o'clock to talk about the Jaguars with you. And you can help our military stay connected to loved ones when you bring a gently used cell phone to Sunday's game. Again, that's Jaguars Military Appreciation Day. When you do, you'll provide a member of our overseas military with a 60-minute phone card. So please, when you come to the stadium on Sunday, go through the closets, go through your car, you know, the counters, your purse. Find that old cell phone, bring it with you, and when you do, a 60-minute conversation between a member of our overseas military and their loved one will take place during the holiday season. And don't you want to be a part of that? All right, more to come after this quick timeout. News is next on News Talk Radio WOKV, and you're listening to Jaguars Radio. Timing is just slightly off this evening. I think it's the venison. Log, it's really good.
Good.
Man, I think I'm sleeping. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Jaguars-Texans Sunday, 1 o'clock kickoff. Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue tailgate show begins at 10 a.m. on Sunday morning. Set of pregame show at noon, kickoff at 1. Of course, the game will be followed by the Winn-Dixie postgame show and the Southern Ford Dealers scoreboard show. These Texans are really good, aren't they? And this is a good football team.
Really good football team, and boy, this is not the week that you want to go into it to where you've got question marks with Terrence Knighton, Clint Session. There's no question mark. You're not going to have him. He's on injured reserve. And then Matt Roth left the Cleveland game with a head issue. That's not a good combination when you're going against the Houston Texans, who run the ball second in the National Football League. Who's number one, by the way? I got to look
this
up.
Number one rushing team in the NFL would probably be the Eagles, wouldn't it? Because
Michael Vick, know all the numbers,
right? But this is probably the best running team. And something Jeff kind of touched on is, and sometimes these things can sneak up on you during the season.
It is Philly, yeah.
But this team's hurting on defense, and you know, last week you lose Rasheen, now you lose Clint. You're down. You know, you're already pretty much down Campman for the season. It looks, you know, so far.
Yeah.
Now you're down I mean, the third-ranked defense, but there is a lot of personnel loss right now in this defense.
Yeah, which is not going to be easy to overcome. You know, looking at the Houston Texans, you know, the real strength of their football team is obviously their ability to run the ball, but their offensive line may be the best in the league. I mean, they've played every game together. It's been a unit that has just gotten better and better. And, boy, what a long way they've come since the Texans that we used to watch of old, where they just never invested in draft picks along the offensive front. And since the general manager there in Houston took over, he bought right into the motto, hey, you got to get the big guys first, and he's built that team the right way. And they're really talented across the front. You know?
And they're well I mean, it's one thing to be talented across the front. Just, you know, we always compare this team to the, you know, late 90s Broncos because offensively they're a carbon copy. Just like that team, they work very well together. You know, they're good individually, and they're really better than some of their parts.
Yeah, that, you're right. I mean, you're right on the money. The one individual, though, that to me is their best offensive lineman is the left tackle, Dwayne Brown. I mean, Dwayne Brown is – he might be the best left tackle in football.
Right, and he missed some games for various reasons this year. He hasn't this year, and it really shows.
No, but if you look at him, the way that he run blocks and the way that he pass blocks and the kind of the – I can't say the word that I want to say over the air, but he's got a little jerk in him.
Yeah.
And the way he plays around piles, the way he finishes plays, if he doesn't make the Pro Bowl, it would be a shame. Because he deserves it.
And it's interesting because I was kind of looking through this for some reason this week. The league right now, like when Tony played, there were three or four really dominant left tackles, arguably Hall of Fame guys. Right now, there's really not. The guy last week in Cleveland, as you said, is an elite-level talent.
Athlete.
Maybe not as great a performer as he is a talent. But there's really not that elite-level left tackle right now like there were with Pace and Ogden and Tony and
you know, Walter Jones.
Yeah, I mean, so it's kind of a dip in that for some reason. But as you said, Dwayne Brown's up there with the guys who are playing now.
He's really good. And, you know, with Matt Leinart, I mean, holy cow. You know, they run the ball very well. You know, Matt Schaub's numbers, really, the best plays that he's had all year long have been play action. And so Matt Leinart, I mean, you talk about the perfect offense to have a backup, to be able to step right into. I mean, it doesn't get any better than this.
Well, and this is, you know, as much as we're all talking about the opportunity for teams to catch the Texans now, This is a career-defining moment for Matt Leinart. You know, if he can't show that he can be a starter in this situation, he may never get the shot again. You know, this is sort of that shot that, you know, guys sort of hope for when they've, I don't want to say washed out, but obviously did not do what he wanted to in Arizona. This is why he stayed there this offseason. It's why he didn't go to Seattle. This is a very good offense. If he's ever going to do it, if he's ever going to show that he deserves that second chance, this is the moment. And, you know, there are still people in Houston who aren't, fans I'm talking about, who aren't real high on Matt Schaub and think, you know, that Leinart might bring him something extra. You know, so who knows?
Their team, though, is so good.
Right.
No one's catching it. I mean, they're legitimately a top defense. And with that running game, I don't care who the quarterback is. When you've got Owen Daniels and Kevin Walter and Andre Johnson, if he's healthy, Leinart doesn't have to be great.
Which is why, if he can't do it with this setup,
he may be done.
Well, you know, he'll probably fall into that career backup, you know, a guy you see playing, you know, somewhere at 34, 35, where you go, oh, yeah, Leinart plays for that team. Yeah. Which, you know, happens. And
well, and they're, the way they use their tight ends, and I said this, oh, heck, Brian, going back to the pregame show when we were in Houston. Now, I really believe that the offensive coordinator slash head coach Gary Kubiak is one of the brightest offensive minds in football.
Right.
The way he utilizes the tight ends, the way he utilizes personnel, he's a tremendous offensive mind, and I think he gets the most out of his guys. I mean, holy cow. I mean, to be able to have two backs, work them in smoothly to where they all are happy, and to have an elite wide receiver but still make the tight end a big part of the passing game,
mm-hmm.
you know, even though Andre Johnson has missed six games. I mean, that, to me, I mean, that's a phenomenal coaching job. And, you know, and it's easier to be a phenomenal coach when you've got a lot of talent, and I think the Texans have a lot of talent.
Do you see the number on this? Since Johnson went out in week four, they have averaged 417 yards of offense per game. Yeah, since he left.
I think sometimes when you have a guy like Andre Johnson, that sometimes he can almost hamper the offense. And I don't mean that in a negative way because of the guy, because Andre Johnson's a team player. He's a phenomenal player. But I think sometimes a quarterback or an offensive coordinator feels the pressing need to get the ball to him at all costs instead of letting the actual play and the defense kind of dictate where the ball goes to.
And kind of speaking to your point, Jeff, you know, about Kubiak, I, like you guys, have seen this team – a couple of times a year since Kubiak got there. There were a lot of times in past years where the biggest thing with the Texans is, for some reason, they had a mental thing with the Colts. They could not hold on to a lead. They could not get past that. Obviously, that doesn't matter this year because the Colts are so down. But, you know, they gave up a lot of leads to the Colts over the years. And, you know, twice they gave up 17-point leads in the fourth quarter and really just kind of choked away chances to win the division. But you never saw them go into a game offensively where they were unprepared and where they looked like they couldn't function. I mean, and that's usually when you see a team twice a year. Once in a while, you'll see them where they just kind of come out and sputter. The Texans always look prepared, and they always look like they know how to attack a defense.
Well, they just haven't had a defense. That's really the
no,
key, right?
I mean, that's sure. The biggest difference with the Texans. But I also think that with the emergence of two backs that they have instead of just one back really has taken the offense to another level. Now, if you look at it as far as yards and points, maybe it hasn't taken them to a higher level than what they've been in years past.
Right.
But if you look at the way they play the game, you know, as far as running the football at critical moments, in years past, you didn't see the Texans run the ball at critical moments and win a game running the football. That's the big difference, obviously, with the emergence of Arian Foster, but you know, holy cow, this guy Ben Tate. And then, heck, you know, Derek Ward, who was great player in New York, is now an afterthought. I mean, do you think the Jaguars would love to have Derek Ward as a third-team back right now, or a second-team back for that matter?
And, you know, 75% of that is what you talked about earlier, Jeff. Their offensive line, such continuity that they're really to the point where it almost doesn't matter who's behind them.
They are running the ball.
They have that kind of confidence.
I'm sorry to interrupt. They are running the ball as well as the Jaguars did in 07 when they made that playoff run. And between Fred and Maurice, anytime they wanted to and anytime they needed to, they did.
This week, I went and watched because, you know, obviously Jaguars played them not too long ago. I only watched one game this week. I was on the tape of the Texans. And they absolutely dominated the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It was never even a game from the onset. They dominated them. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense almost looked like they quit. And that happens when you've got an offense that's functioning at a really high level.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Mike's been waiting at Callahan. You're next. And James is up in Kentucky. We'll grab him when we return to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live from Everbank Field on the night before Thanksgiving, here on Jaguars Radio. And welcome back. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live from Everbank Field. Brian Sexton, John Osher, Jeff Lagerman, Joe Fortunato, and a couple of callers who've been holding on. We've got Mike, who joins us from Callahan. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Hello, fellas. Good show tonight.
Thank you.
I'm all ears. Jeff, I usually talk to you on Saturdays.
Well, I'm glad you called on a Wednesday.
Thank God for Saturdays some days. Because I'll tell you, that Mercedes is hurting my feelings real bad.
Well,
Lewis.
The one thing, Mike, about Mercedes is that, you know, there are guys that I get angry at when they underperform and I think that they're not doing the right things. And then there are guys that underperform in certain areas that I don't get mad at because I know that they're doing everything that they believe needs to be done. You know, and Mercedes is the right kind of guy. And I will say that over the last 3 weeks, he's gotten back to his dominant level of blocking, which earlier in the season he wasn't doing, which that was the one issue that I had because, you know, Mercedes is going to drop balls. He's always done that in his career. And last year he didn't have many, which was a change. But the one consistent part of Mercedes year in and year out has been his dominant blocking ability, and this year it wavered a little bit. But now it's gotten back to where that's the dominant trait that he possesses. I thought that against Cleveland, besides the first drop that was low, but it was a catchable ball, you know, about a foot off the ground, should have been made, but the way he responded and went on to catch, what, seven balls in that game?
Career high.
After that, if Mercedes didn't play the way that he played it in that game, they would have had no chance of getting back into that game and having an opportunity to win it at the end.
Oh, I thought that was the first time this season, and again, people know I didn't cover this team until this year, it was the first time that I had seen Mercedes, you know, sort of will his way to be a dominant factor. I mean, he sort of, which you see tight ends do sometimes, he had not really done that. But, you know, they sort of forced the ball to him a couple of times, and I mean that in a good way. They made it a point to get him involved, and he made a couple of tough catches, you know, that, you know, he sort of looked unsteady on a couple, but he made sure he got the darn ball in his hand. And then he sort of, you know, started running over some guys and doing some things that were, you know, it just looked like he kind of forced his will upon the game at times, which I had not seen him do before.
Well, and I think Dick Duron, the Cleveland Browns defensive coordinator, I don't want to say miscalculated because it's kind of hard to say that. He ended up matching a backup strong safety, Usama Young, on Mercedes Lewis in man coverage at a critical point in the game. And do you really want to do that?
Right.
No, but Mercedes has been struggling this year. So, yeah, maybe Dick Duron was right. But you know, other teams, even though Mercedes has been struggling, still gave him the respect. But now you go to the very end of the game.
They bracketed him on that.
They bracketed him on a critical point in the ball game there at the very end, which was very smart on Dick Duron's part.
And, Jeff, maybe explain that a little bit. Because I got, you know, I talked to Mercedes after the game, and he said exactly that. And then I got a lot of emails this week in the Ozone that he
Joe missed it.
I was waiting
way.
For a ding there, Jeff.
Yeah, but
he
got a ding.
But a lot of people still emailed and said, in that situation, if you're going to pass, you got to get the ball to Mercedes. But you can take a guy away if you want to in that situation. Can
absolutely.
You not?
They the Cleveland Browns defense said you can try to complete the ball anywhere else, but you're not going to do it to Mercedes Lewis. And I don't remember the exact personnel. I thought they had a linebacker on the inside, and then they had a safety on the outside. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was a safety in a corner, whatever. But they said, we're going to put two on him. He's not going to catch it. You got to go somewhere else with it. And we're talking about the very last play of the game.
Right.
On the left to the outside, there were single coverage, but then you had a linebacker that was buzzing underneath of it, really trying to provide help to both of those receivers to that side of the field. The one-on-one opportunities were with Mike Thomas in the middle, who had a matchup against the middle linebacker DeQuell Jackson, and then you had Scott Fujita, I believe,
out in the flat,
covering Maurice Jones-Drew in the flat. And so Blaine Gabbert made a good read. Mercedes double covered. Mm-hmm. Go to your next option, which is, hey, I like, you know, a wide receiver against a linebacker in the middle of the field. Mike Thomas got to do something more. I mean, Mike Thomas got to be more decisive and quicker and, you know, whatever you want to call it, to get separation from the linebacker versus quarterback, and then the quarterback's got to throw the ball a little bit better. He got a little separation.
The phrase Jack used was, Mike needs to define the route, which I took to mean that Mike's got to do something more decisive.
He's got
to
do something
to
full
speed.
To show
Blaine what he's doing.
He's got to do something full speed.
Right, and that gives Blaine – he had an option on the route, and if he had done something full speed – then that shows Blaine what the play is going to be.
And I'm not saying that he was loafing. I don't want people to misconstrue what I'm saying.
He was indecisive.
He was just indecisive because he was maybe expecting the linebacker to play him one way, and he got it another way. And then when he saw it, it was if, uh-oh, it's not the way we drew it up. Now what do I do?
Right. And bang, 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 you can't.
Now it's too late.
Yeah, it's hard to recover that.
You know.
Well, that was what Jack explained last night. He talked about how the linebacker, in fact, that's where he drew it on the board right there, the linebacker played that route more aggressively than they expected. His route was to break it back to the outside in the direction where Mercedes was headed, and then when he came back to the inside, he did it indecisively, and so Blaine wasn't sure where to throw the ball.
Right, people are on Blaine for throwing the ball behind him.
But he didn't define the route, as
correct.
The coach said.
Correct, and that's, you know, again, Blaine's being blamed for a lot of inaccuracy this year, so that kind of piles into it. And
what's tough in the moment when you watch it on
TV, either way,
to understand it.
Exactly.
I mean, from where we were, I thought Jason Hill flat dropped the ball.
Yeah, it was hard to tell.
The angle that I had, he flat dropped the ball. And then when you go back and look at the tape, you see that Joe Hayden was able to pin him down. The angle that we had showed that the ball went behind Mike Thomas.
Right.
And immediately you think, well, okay, Blaine threw it bad. Not until you look at the tape that you showed, and then Jack explains it, do you really understand that that was Mike?
Well, and a lot of people say, well, you should have thrown it to Mercedes. I mean, to Maurice in the flat. Yeah, that could have been an option.
Maybe.
But, I mean, by the time he turns to look, throws the ball, Maurice catches it. That 10-yard gap or 8-yard gap from the linebacker to Maurice, the linebacker might have been able to cover that ground in its entirety.
It was not a walk-in play.
No, by the time that Maurice was able to get a handle on the ball.
Right.
And I'm okay. I understand what people are saying. Hey, best player, get it in his hand. I'm all for that, but they did twice already. You know, the third down and then the first down. You know, so
it didn't sound like you had a problem with not running him there.
No.
Because the vast majority of the readers, you got to give the ball to Jones-Drew. And I agree with you.
But to me,
giving the ball to your best player does not always mean it's the best play.
I would have, you know, and if you don't give the ball to Maurice in that situation, which I'm totally okay with.
Right.
Maybe give the impression that you are.
Sure.
That would have, that would have made sense. All right, folks, so we have reached the end of hour number one, and a week from today, that's November 30th, the Auto Spot Tire Pros at 9718 Touchton Road invite you to join them for cookies with the Jaguars rookies from noon till 2. They'll be signing autographs, sharing cookies, and giving you a chance to win an autographed football and club seats to the Monday night game against the Chargers. News is next.
Hey, by the way, on that play also, there was another option. You know, we talk about Mike Thomas. We talk about Mercedes. The other option is, you know, because linebacker, we said, if we're looking at it from the offense perspective, a linebacker is buzzing out to the left flat. Maurice is in the right flat. Mercedes Lewis, top right, is getting bracketed. Mike Thomas trying to work underneath one-on-one. What does that mean? You got a bracket. You got single coverage here. There were four down rush look. Blaine could have
possibly
scored by tucking it and running it.
Did you see that in the tape?
Tim Tebow would have, Jeff.
Oh, my God. How many of those did you get this week?
Oh, it's, yeah, it just wears you out after a while.
You didn't get one from my 10-year-old, did you? All I'm saying.
Probably.
355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. News is next. You're listening to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on Jaguars Radio. All right, welcome back. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Hour number two now, live from Everbank Field in Jacksonville. You can join us, 800-355-NFL1, if you're out and about this evening, traveling, staying in touch with us via the internet. Or you can join us at 355-6351 if you are local here in Jacksonville. And if you've got your phone in your hand now, are you tweeting, Twittering?
No.
All right, I just wonder whether you're checking
No.
At John Osher, at the Jags Voice, and we will get your tweet thoughts on the air this evening.
Yeah, I'm looking for some tweets.
All right, anything that that stands out?
I haven't found them yet.
We've got one, you know, Clint Sessions injury info, and Gene Smith told us yesterday that it really was a matter of looking at his long-term health.
Right. And, you know, with the second concussion in a single season, that it, I don't say it's the norm, but it's not unusual. You know, with two concussions, six games left, you're basically out of the playoff chase. You know, I don't have a problem with him being smart.
No. No, and there were, heck, the on the Jaguars All Access program Monday night, plug. I showed two plays that Clint Session where I thought on Jaguars All Access that it might have been that it might have been, you know, a head hit, you know, right, where he got a concussion as a result of the contact. And the one play was the first one I showed, and then I showed another play, but there was a play right before that to where the Browns got down close to the goal line and he actually collided with one of his own guys. Mm-hmm. And if you watch the second play that I showed, it looked like Clint was really trying to clear the cobwebs before the last play, which was where he took on the fullback Marisic. And at that play, both of them were out. I mean, Clint wasn't out, but Marisic got the stiff arms, which is a telltale sign of, you know, head injury, concussion. Right. The arms kind of get stiff, you know, and he got that look to him. You know, and shoot, I was watching the New England Patriots game the other night, watching their tight end, Gronkowski, go head over heels and land on his head, and it looked like he was about to fall over, and then he's over on the sideline kind of working his neck out like it was a neck thing. I don't think so.
Right.
Here's another one. With Guy Whimper's injury, do you think Cameron Bradfield might deserve a shot at playing some right tackle?
Well, what do they list the injury as?
I don't even know if he's on the injury report today. I just know that they've been working on his leg on the bench a couple of times the last few games.
He went limited today. There didn't seem to be any, you know, big indication either way whether it would keep him out or not.
But clearly he's been struggling with some
injuries. You're at that point in the season where, you know, I don't know that you necessarily don't start Guy, but – you know, you play Guy for a while, and if it's not getting better. Yeah, then I think you play him. I think, you know, as much as he's become a point of emphasis for fans, I think you play Cecil Shorts, you know, guys like that, and give them a chance to see what they can do. And Jeff, I think you may feel differently about Cecil, but.
Well, I've always felt that, you know, I would never play anybody because it's the end of the year and we need to find out. I think that the attitude always has to be the same. You have to earn the right to be on the field, because if it's not earned, then it's never the right message to send.
Okay.
So if Cecil is starting to show better in practice, if he's starting to be more productive on a Wednesday and a Thursday and a Friday, then yes, then he gets more opportunities on a Sunday. But that's got to happen first, because in my mind, that goes against everything that I believe in, and that something has to be earned. Otherwise, it's the wrong message to the player, most importantly, but also, almost just as important, it sends the wrong message to the rest of the team.
Sure. All right, let's grab a call. James is up in Kentucky. He's been holding for a while. James, welcome to the program.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you doing tonight?
Good.
Hey, Jeff kind of stole it before the break. My comment was really just at the end of the game, and I guess he'd seen the same thing possibly that I had seen when I was looking back at the replay with the running Wayne Blanket ahead. My question was, I know quarterbacks, they throw first, you know, they make their reads, but do you think he should have perhaps ran instead or do you think it was the right call from to try to get it to Mike Thomas?
Well, you got to remember one thing. We kind of break this down and look at it from the standpoint of we're seeing the replay, you know, and we're looking at it, you know, again and again and again and again. You know, from a quarterback standpoint, if Blaine's eyes are disciplined, his eyes aren't looking at where right. running lanes are at.
And you really don't want him to be looking for running lanes as a general rule.
No. So, James, it's hard to criticize a young player for doing the right thing, and that's keeping his eyes where they need to be, and that's down the field. Now, if he had a flash of pressure and he scores at that point, we're going, oh, what a great job
sure.
of seeing the running play. But he's got to have something that tells him, I've got to take it and go.
And that may be something that he, you know, because he can run. He showed, you know, he had a real nice running play in the game, and that's something that I know Gene Smith likes about him a lot is that when there's pressure, he can turn it into something.
Well, I think he got, what, two first downs on that one drive with
and
his legs.
And I think probably next year he might, you know, there's still a process of the game slowing down. Next year, if he was in that exact same situation, he may sense something a little different from having been on the field 16 times, and that sort of situation.
Well, and he'll learn. I mean, holy cow, for many years we would watch David, who was a mobile running quarterback. When he saw man coverage and the guys were going down the field and coverage guys had their backs to him, he knew that was an opportunity to run the
right.
football. And Blaine will eventually get to that point where he
right.
learns all of that too.
But that's not, as you said, his instinct, a Garrard, a Tebow, a guy like that, his instinct in that situation is going to be to see man and run. But a pass-oriented quarterback has been trained to be looking at the receivers and trying to read the breaks and trying to read the routes. So,
since we're talking about the running game, can I get a couple more carries for Montel Owens?
I mean,
over Deji Kareem.
All four.
I mean, I like Deji, and you put Deji, you know, out in the route like he was in Indianapolis with that catch and 17-yard run. I'm all over that. But,
well,
I mean, Montel ran beautifully on that 8-yard run.
Well, I mean, you're, what, 10 games in.
You know what he is.
And it's 2.1 a carry.
Yeah.
Yes, it's time to get Montel more carries or Greg Jones or whoever else. But, I mean, Deji is – and I'm not saying you just take Deji out of the game altogether.
No, but
there's still
there's a role for him. Sure.
But that role is not, you know, following Greg Jones on a lead play up the middle.
I'm saying expand Montel's because I think he gave, you know, that 8-yard
run. Well, he's healthy again.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that might be part of it. You know, we're finally seeing him back.
This team really misses Rashad Jennings.
Oh, no doubt.
I'm not sure that we all thought it would be as significant as it has become. He's just he's not a change of pace back. He's number two guy.
He's
your Ben Tate.
He's a legitimate number two, and, you know, hopefully next year he'll be back. And, you know, because he had, I thought, a spectacular training camp. You know, because Maurice was so limited, and I thought that Rashad looked very good in training camp. I don't remember his game production, but I just remember watching practices. You just went, wow, this guy physically looks like he's taking another step.
Right. I mean, I think we knew going into the season that the receiving group was going to be a work in progress. I mean, we knew what Mike Thomas was. We hoped Jason Hill might become more. But you thought that the two guys that are not there, Zach Miller and Rashad Jennings, would be able to help you overcome the lack of production outside. And neither one of them is there right now.
No.
That's a big story.
Well, there was no production from Rashad because I believe he got hurt in New England.
No, Buffalo.
Buffalo, okay. And I'm not sure he played before that. I mean, it was very, very limited in game.
Well, you hate to say next year, but, you know, I mean, that's the only thing you can say
sure.
when it comes to him is, you know, next year you hope that he's back 100%. But, you know, the one thing that you do is, you know, you try to add another guy to that spot. And if he's
great competition.
If he's there, great. If he can't earn the right to play, then that – too bad.
Right.
The other guy in the running game that has showed promise, but he's been injured for a while, is Brock Bolin.
Yeah, and I'm not on that Brock Bolin bandwagon.
No,
I'm really not.
There's a bunch of people around here that like his ability.
No,
short
and
yardage.
I know a lot of people like him in short yardage. He's pretty good and everything, but he's a good special teams player. And he carried the ball at Louisville. You know, and I get all that. You know, I don't know. I just need to see more to make me believe that he's a guy that can carry.
Well, maybe we will if he's healthy.
More balls. I just, you know, games. You know, I, he's flexible. He can play fullback. He can play tailback. And guys that have that versatility like that, shoot, I mean, they're great on game day, especially when you're down to 46. But you know, give me a guy that can carry the rock. Right. And in this offense with a young quarterback, you got to have what Houston's got, and that's two guys that can carry the rock.
Well, Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. We have got 45 more minutes of our Thanksgiving edition of Jaguars This Week, live from Everbank Field and presented by Aetna. And you're listening on Jaguars Radio.
Hey.
All right, welcome back to Jaguars This Week. Hey, as we went to the break, you may have heard a small Thanksgiving editorial, in a sense, from Jay Gray, who offers some sports commentary during the morning show on WOKV. His opinion, not part of our show. We did not run that from our studio, and we do not find that to be...
And he's not a part of Jaguars Radio,
right,
period.
It's not what we do. We do. That's WOKV.
He ain't tonight.
Yeah. Not what we
he
do.
He is not a part of our show on Wednesday night.
Yeah. No, he's not. So just want you to be able to delineate from that. You know, we call it like we see it. We talk about the facts, but we do not offer those kinds of opinions here on this show. So that belongs to him and to Jay Gray exclusively. Buehler Swiss Watch Company, proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars. You can get yours at Jacobs Jewelers in Jacksonville, Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Lorraine's Diamond Tree in Middleburg, Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carbone Jewelers in Valdosta. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, Brian, Jeff, John, Joe. If you'd like to join us, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351. And we have been talking about the Texans, about the Jaguars, and the Browns from last week. When you look at the AFC right now, I mean, to kind of go big picture here, we know who the best team in the NFC is, clearly.
Oh, Green
Bay. It's the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, yeah, they're on a roll.
Who would you say tonight is the best team in the AFC?
You know, after watching New England the other night, I would not say them.
No, their defense has been very suspect for a long time, and it still is.
I think every team in the AFC has an issue. If the Texans did not lose Matt Schaub, they would be my number one.
Yes.
Tell you what, you know, I know this team beat the Ravens, so the fans here may have a different opinion of the Ravens. When the Ravens are playing well, they're going to be tough to beat by a team in the AFC right now. I mean, when they get it going, and same is true of Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh and Baltimore in that last game they played were not separated by much. I would still be a little surprised if it didn't come down to one of those two teams in the end.
I think the Texans are as complete a team as you'll find. And I know that the quarterback situation is unsettled there. But when you look at the way their offensive line is playing, with that, you know, two-headed monster at running back, with the receivers and the tight ends, with the defense the way that it's playing right now, there's no reason why they couldn't be a Super Bowl team. I don't know that they'd beat Aaron Rodgers. I mean, if Leiner comes in here and lays an absolute egg, okay, that's one thing.
Well, and he's not going to be...
I don't think they'll put him in a position.
And you're not going to be able to evaluate Matt Leinart off of this game this weekend. I mean, you
can't build.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, if you're a Texans fan and you're a part of the Texans organization, what you're hoping is that, you know, he will continue to build, because obviously the last time that he's played a game of any meaning was end of November of 2009. He did play against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when Matt Schaub did hurt his foot, but it was all he did for the rest of that game was hand off. He never even threw the ball one time, you know. So, but you know, the one thing though that I always watch kind of before the game, who warms up, and I want to see which team really works the backup quarterback before the game. And the Texans are a team that before every game, Greg Knapp, their quarterback's coach, works with Matt Leinart. Matt Leinart is out there before the game and works for probably 30 to 40 minutes of footwork, you know, throwing the ball and accuracy, because he knows he's not going to get a lot of work in the game. And that's what you have to do with the backup quarterback. You know, you've got to be able to work him because at some point he's going to have to take over. And I give, you know, Gary Kubiak and the Texans credit for doing that because, you know, I don't. There's not many teams that you see do that. And right. I remember it because it stood out to me mm-hmm. that here is Matt Leinart, you know, former Heisman Trophy winner, first round pick of the Arizona Cardinals, was, you know, Mr. Hollywood at USC and coming out. But he's continuing to work.
And I'm not in Matt Leinart's head, but he had a chance to go play for Pete Carroll this offseason, his coach at USC, and chose to stay in Houston. So he may have the same vibe you do, Jeff, that, hey, these guys care about the backup quarterback. I'm getting coaching here. This is going to be an opportunity. This is the best place for me. And, you know, that – I still say this is a real chance for him to resurrect the career, and it's a good opportunity for him.
Well, biggest thing he's got to change is his body language. I mean, that's the number one thing that I'm going to be looking at with Matt Leinart, because I thought that his body language was terrible when he was with the Arizona Cardinals. It was kind of a lackadaisical, I don't care, I'm super hot and good, kind of a vibe that
you
he would
give
off.
You think that was, I came out, Heisman Trophy winner, top 10 pick, I'm not playing, maybe, I'm better than this.
Maybe.
And he learned his lesson.
You know, but did he? We don't know.
He had that vibe at USC. I mean, I think that he probably gets a bad rap because that's probably just kind of how he carries himself, period.
Yeah, but that's not a way to give off body right. language. I mean, body language for a quarterback is so important. I mean, he's the leader of your football team. He's the leader of your offense. And you can't have that body language if you're the captain of the ship.
You never saw that in Carson Palmer, did you?
Do you see no, Mark Sanchez? No. I see a little bit of that in Mark Sanchez. You know, and I don't like that with Mark Sanchez.
Thing, you know?
You know, it's – and I think that – I don't want to say that this is always true. But I – it goes back to my thing in that you got to make guys earn it. You know, Matt Leinart, when he was at Arizona, never really earned it. He was given the job, thinking he was going to be the guy. Then they signed Kurt Warner, and then Kurt leaves. And, well, you know, he's the next guy up, you know. And it's the same thing with Mark Sanchez. From the moment Mark Sanchez walked into the door, what did he ever have to really earn? You know, who did he have to beat out? Nobody. No. I mean, got rid of Chad Pennington, Mark Sanchez, he's our guy. You know, and I think that sometimes that attitude, that's why I think making guys earn it mm-hmm. is so important, because I think it prohibits some of that stuff that we see with a Matt Leinart.
355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. Wouldn't you agree, though?
We had the same thing happen when I was in New York. You know, we had Ken O'Brien, and we had Brownie Nagel. And Brownie Nagel was our first pick in the draft in 90, 91, 92, whenever it was.
Louisville, right?
Louisville. And Ken O'Brien was the quarterback before him, and a solid quarterback. Mm-hmm. And then Ken O'Brien's contract was up. They had, the year before, had drafted Brownie Nagel. All he did was hold a clipboard during the week and have plenty of nights out. I mean, as far as he was concerned, you know, hey, I'm just here to hang out this year. And he never really gave that effort that hey, that first year, let me put my nose to the grindstone and really learn and earn the opportunity that I may have next year when Ken O'Brien's contract is up. Well, Ken O'Brien's contract was up the following year, and they played hardball with Ken O'Brien for the sole reason of allowing Brownie Nagel to really take over. Then they signed Ken late. Browning takes over. It was atrocious. You know, and he didn't earn anything. Got to make him earn it.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. I just go back one more time. When you have a running game like this, though, and a defense playing that well, how far can they go? If Matt Leinart is good, not great, but good.
They can go all the way.
I mean, when you look at the rest of the AFC, I know Tom Brady is phenomenal, but their defense isn't all that good. The Bills have fallen off. The Jets have shown what they are. The Steelers are a very good team.
Ravens and the Steelers.
The Ravens and the Steelers, but the Ravens, we saw them here. I mean, they weren't all
Ravens
that good.
Got a lot of question marks. They don't have the players at the corner positions
right.
to really stop a team that can pass the ball with success. Can they stop a team that runs the football? Yeah, but there's a question mark with Ray Lewis now and his toe. I mean, across the board, I mean, the Texans, like I said before, if they didn't lose Matt Schaub, they're my top team in the AFC.
And there's no one that is head and shoulders ahead of them right now in the AFC.
No.
Or anyone. Nobody. Or anybody, for that matter.
You know, the only difference that you may have is that, you know, you've got a Ravens team that's kind of been there, done that. It's got the experience.
Steelers,
you know, Pittsburgh's got the same kind of thing working for them. The AFC West, you know, I mean, it's a mess. So to me, that's the two teams. You know, New England's got defensive issues, but I mean, Tom Brady, watching him the other night, I think he's got an issue with this elbow thing going on.
And there's been something going on this year. There's been a few too many teams that have shut them down, or that have kind of gotten to Brady and made him look, you know, not very Brady-like. That may be the elbow or whatever, but you usually don't see the Patriots offense sort of stumble the way it has a couple times this year. So, I mean, you know, I think it's a point you're making, Jeff, is that New England doesn't really seem like they're one of those New England teams that's going to go all the way this year.
No. No. They'll have a chance.
Sure.
If Tom Brady gets back to playing like the Tom Brady that we've seen before.
But even their passing game when he's right is a little one-dimensional this year.
They're one-dimensional offense, period.
Sure.
Tight ends.
Right.
You know?
Right. It's not really a deep threat type offense right now. They, you know, work a lot of stuff over the middle, and it's just not quite as versatile as you see in those Patriots teams where you feel like they're unstoppable.
Season ticket holders get paid at the pump when you buy 10 gallons or more of Gate gasoline. Show your Jaguars rewards card and receipt to the cashier for your coupon worth $2 in Jagbucks, redeemable for game day concessions and merchandise. News is next, then 30 more minutes of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on Jaguars Radio. All right, welcome back. Jaguars This Week is about 24 minutes left in it, minus a couple for one more commercial timeout, and then we will join our families for some holiday enjoyment. Hopefully you are already enjoying the warm embrace of family and friends this season, and we'll do so very, very safely. Your hands are on the wheel. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the final 25 minutes of this program. You know, for the first time in years, we've got some great games on Thanksgiving Day.
Fantastic games. I mean, obviously, a big part of that is the Detroit Lions have started to rebound, and they're playing well.
Yep. That's it, because we haven't seen a Detroit game with any real significance in years.
Not a long time.
Charlie Batch was there, you know, a little bit, maybe Barry Sanders.
Well, and Tony Sperano kind of gotten the Dolphins playing pretty good. I mean, it's not a marquee matchup like, you know, the night game obviously
right.
is going to be. But, I mean, that's an attractive game because Miami's playing better. Matt Moore, their quarterback, has seemed to have found a groove. And with the Dallas Cowboys, they're one of them teams you don't know what to expect. One week they look great. The next week you're just like, ah.
Have you heard Jason Garrett's name on the hot seat at all?
No.
I mean, I understand he just became the head coach last year, but that's the Dallas Cowboys. That's a franchise that needs to win. They got to fill up that building.
Well, Jerry Jones is one of the more unique owners in the National Football League, and you know, I don't know if there's been an owner that has stuck his foot in his mouth more than Jerry Jones has this year. I mean, it seems like every week there was something coming out about Jerry questioning the coaching, questioning players. Whatever, you know, but the amazing part is I don't ever see Jerry question personnel.
Oh, that's
how convenient
that is. His area. Hey, you know, interesting note, Kyle Orton was obviously released yesterday by the Broncos. Everyone thought, and in fact the story was that he was asking for his release to return to Chicago from where he came to replace Jay Cutler, who's obviously been injured with a broken thumb. And the Chiefs jumped in there and got him. They had him on the waiver wire. Clearly, they have quarterback issues also. But now Todd Archer of ESPN Dallas reports that the Cowboys put in a bid for Kyle Orton. What does that say? Anything at all?
Well, who's Tony Romo's backup?
Well, it was last year. It was, what can I think of his name? The guy who was with Cincinnati, Seattle, the backup.
Kitna.
Yeah, Kitna. John Kitna.
John Kitna.
I mean, it's a team's job to improve its roster, and I think Orton in Dallas would have been a good viable backup for, you know, Romo, who's a guy who, you know, is often susceptible to injury because of the way he plays.
He's up and down.
Yeah, and he's up and down.
You know, so, and Kitna has, you know, been in the league for a long time.
Right. I mean, it's not the Cowboys' responsibility to let the Bears get better.
No.
Is Tony Romo any better than David Garrard was?
Yeah, as a passer, absolutely.
Okay. You hear Tony Romo, he plays in Dallas. You know, good-looking guy on TV there, America's Team.
But I don't think he's good-looking. He's kind of ugly.
Yeah, that's what they talk about. I mean, he had, Jessica, what's her name?
Daisy. Daisy Duke!
You know, I mean, so you get what I'm saying. I mean, but I'm just looking at his numbers, and they're nothing really special.
No, and he's had...
He's okay this year.
He's had some pretty decent years. He's never been an elite-level passer.
He's got 19 touchdowns this year. His passer rating's 99.4. Okay, he's having a decent year. But overall,
this is probably his best season to date. I mean, he's never had that consistency where he's played at a high level.
Right.
You know, he's shown flashes and he's shown stretches to where he's been very good. And then he'll have a stretch to where he's very bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're going to be an elite level player, you know, to get amongst the ranks of a Tom Brady and a Peyton Manning and a Drew Brees, you know, you can't have, you know, those stretches where you're not very good. You know, I think the Dallas Cowboys are fun. I mean, they're like a giant soap opera, you know, and the owner is right there leading the way with the soap opera.
Did you hear Joe? Remember, Joe went out and did a year. He left us.
Yeah.
And went and did a year in Dallas. Was that the 2008 or 2009 season that you were gone?
2008 season.
Okay. And you enjoyed the experience out there?
That was fabulous. I learned a lot.
Learned a lot to come back.
Yeah, he wanted
at least
to come
he only
back.
Had 1 year. Yeah.
I just, you know, Cowboys are fun to watch, and they're obviously covered, you know, tremendously, which is what Jerry Jones wants.
Sure,
I mean he has done probably the best job of anybody in the National Football League of branding his product and building his
maximizing
product.
And it's why he makes himself available to the media after every game because he knows he'll get covered, and he knows that all. He knows his soundbite will be on ESPN, and you know it'll get airtime. And
if you're the head coach,
profile.
You better have thick skin.
Yeah,
it just is what it is.
Yeah, if you're the head coach there, you know, with the Dallas Cowboys, you'd almost want a Rex Ryan, Rob Ryan type of head coach that can have some fun with it, and you know, and kind of banter back and forth, you know, with the media. With some, you know, in response to some of the comments that the owner would make.
It's like managing the Yankees in the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good analogy. And then the final Thanksgiving Day game, which is obviously, you know, played out to be as good as it gets.
Coach of the year.
Yeah. Jim versus John, the Harbaugh brothers.
And do you realize how close the 49ers are to being undefeated? They were way up on Dallas in the only game they lost. And it was sort of Romo's miracle game that made up for something he had done the week before. But, you know, the 49ers should have won that game. They should be 10-0. Now, I'm not saying they're as good as Green Bay. I think Green Bay is going to win the whole thing. But
they are not far off. The San Francisco 49ers play really good defense. Mm-hmm. And if the 49ers play the Green Bay Packers in the playoffs, that's the game of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Game of the year.
Because it's one of those games kind of like the Super Bowl with the Patriots and the Giants where all the talk will be about the Packers' offense. And it'll be one of those games that's 21-17 at the end going one way or the other.
Yep.
And because of Aaron Rodgers, you tend to give the Packers the edge. But, you know, you're right. Often those hyped games between the defense and the offense don't turn out the way that the experts think it will.
Now, I think that's – if I could watch one game this year, you know, in conference battles, I mean, to me, that game is it.
I want to point out that we all kind of thought, mistakenly so, that coaches who came in with, you know, new coaches, mm-hmm. without the benefit of the offseason to get to know their team would be at a severe disadvantage. And yet, here's a guy who not only is a new head coach with a team that he didn't have, but a quarterback that no one wanted. And look what he's done.
It's right.
It's one of the better coaching jobs that I've seen in 20 years in this league.
Coach of the year. Hands down, it's not even close. And, you know, we talked about how the lockout would affect some teams. The lockout may have been the best thing that ever happened to the Green Bay Packers. Might have been.
Why?
You know, the one thing when you talk to guys that have been to a Super Bowl over the years is that they never seem to have gotten a break.
Right.
You know, from, you know, because they play late, you know, all the way into February. And then, you know, hey, great job, back to work. You know, you really never had a chance to really separate from the previous season. And the lockout obviously allowed the Packers to separate a great distance right. from the previous season. So
it's a very difficult thing. The Colts did a smart thing after they won it in 06. They didn't come back that year until right before the draft. I mean, because they figured up that they had played four extra games that year, three the year before, you know, that over time a lot of their guys had been around the facility for 10 or 11 extra weeks, for 3 months basically, that other teams hadn't. And I think you're talking about the same thing with Green Bay. It was good for them to get away because that can be a real grind on a team.
Yeah, but when they were able to get away this year, they were able to get away
sure.
completely.
Right. right.
You know, completely. No workouts, no contact, no, well, at least most teams.
Right.
No anything. You know, so I guarantee you that there's next year's Super Bowl winner. Can we have another lockout?
Right.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll look at the other games around the National Football League this weekend and wrap up our show here from Everbank Field in Jacksonville. You're listening to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, only on Jaguars Radio. All right, 10 minutes to go here, and then we will cut you loose to enjoy Thanksgiving with your family and friends. We've covered the three games. Did we cover Green Bay, really? Green Bay-Detroit, is that going to be a fun game to watch?
Where's that game at?
It's in Detroit. It's always in Detroit.
It could be Detroit. Day. I mean, Detroit had its lull, and they're playing a little better. I mean, I kind of question whether they can hang with Green Bay. I mean, they barely got by Carolina.
Donald Kuntz says they can.
Well, sure, of course he does. I don't think they're talented enough in the back end. I think that's Detroit's weakness. I mean, they're good in the front seven,
right?
But their back end is not very good. I don't think they can hang with Green Bay. I'd be surprised if they do.
All right. So on to Sunday, Minnesota is at Atlanta.
Eh.
Wow. Got to talk about some of these aren't these good games.
Atlanta's still in trouble.
Cleveland. Yeah, I'm not. Boy, I just Atlanta Falcons and Matt Ryan. Has Matt Ryan really made you in the last 2 years? Right. Made you think what you thought after his rookie year?
By now, you would have thought he would have been clearly in that, at least getting to that group. And sometimes when you watch him, you're like, boy, this could be a little.
And he's got
a little bit of a problem.
Talent. Tony Gonzalez, Roddy White. He's got a running back. He's got a good offensive line, stable offensive line. I don't know.
He's not bad, but
no, he's not bad. But
he's just not
who you thought he would be.
Well, this is his.
Whose words were that?
Denny Green.
He's not who he thought he would be.
Or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
They're who we thought they were.
Something like that. Anyway,
the Bears and
you know what I mean.
Cardinals. Yeah, I remember that game. Minnesota, Atlanta, Cleveland, Cincinnati.
Blacked out.
Which one? Cincinnati?
Cleveland, Cincinnati.
How many Cincinnati games have been blacked out this year?
Don't know the exact number, but that game is blacked out, and Cincinnati will win that ball game running away.
Okay.
An interesting note, Tampa today drastically lowered its season ticket prices.
When you say drastically?
I forget what it was. I mean, 20% on some, non-premium. I may be quoting that wrong, but I was reading some of Rick Stroud from St. Pete Times tweets, and it sounds like they're trying to do something to, fix their attendance issues long-term.
Got to work at it. Then.
Sure.
So we found it here in 2010 with Team Teal. Carolina, Indianapolis.
That's the Colts chance. That's the Colts. But, I talked to a friend of mine who's the beat writer in Indy.
They ain't going to win that.
And that's what he said. I said, hey, Colts may have a chance this week. And he said, they can't stop anybody. And he said, where are points going to come? All the things we saw a couple weeks ago, they see every week. And he said, it's just hard to imagine that team doing enough on either side of the ball to be productive enough to win.
But if they don't get it done then, because they've got back-to-back trips to New England and Baltimore,
they'll probably come here needing that one to
avoid 0-16.
And, to avoid one of the most surprising 0-16s, the Lions when they did it.
Yeah, you knew they weren't very good.
Yeah, I mean, if you had asked anybody the previous season who would be winless the next season, everybody would have said, well, maybe Detroit. Certainly nobody would have predicted this.
No, not that bad. Buffalo at the Jets. Buffalo lost Fred Jackson today for the rest of the season. You know, they had their nice little run. What'd he hurt? Fractured foot.
Really?
I double check on that, but I think that's what it was.
I've been away from the computer for most of the day, you know, and I didn't hear that. What a blow.
And that's a team that had something happened there in the last
fractured
couple
fractured fibula,
weeks.
Pardon me.
Because they were, you know, they had that look of a team that was going to contend and be, you know, 9-7, 10-6, and they look like they're done.
All except for that beard that Fitzpatrick is sporting, which gets woolier and woolier every week.
Talk about timing. The contract that he signed when they got on a roll, and then now they're not on a roll, kind of a roll of the opposite spectrum, and he's already got his deal.
Good for him.
Arizona is at St. Louis. Chicago is at Oakland. Raiders have a run in them, do you suppose, if Darren McFadden can get healthy?
I mean, somebody's got to win that division. I mean, you know, they're 6-4, and, you know, that's looking like a division that's going to get one at 9-7 at this point. You know, the interesting thing there is the Bears looked very, very good until Jay Cutler got hurt. And you know, now with him out, Jay Cutler is one of those guys who can get on a 3 or 4 game run and be as good as anybody.
When Caleb Haney takes over for the Bears?
Yeah, I mean, it's a different dynamic. It's really too bad because they had a good team put together, and he was playing a lot more consistently than he has in the past.
I wonder if Jerry Jones, you know, him putting a claim in for the bearded one in Denver.
Orton.
Kyle Orton. Was he trying to find a way to trade him? You know what I mean? Because if you put in a claim, you still have the ability to trade him, right?
And
not this year, though.
Next year.
In March, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because Orton would have some trade value to a team.
Certainly.
You know, not first round pick.
Or was he
some value?
But did he have one year left on his deal, or was he signed long term?
I don't know the answer to that. I have to look that one up. But here's one.
You know,
possible
that's how
theory,
Jerry thinks.
Though. Well, Jerry might have. You know, he's competing with the Bears for a wild card spot. So you know, claiming Kyle Orton, you know, helps him by hurting the Bears.
I think that has more to do with, you know, because you're talking, you put Kyle Orton back there. Kyle Orton knows that offense a little bit and can function there under Lovie.
Okay, so, how about Tampa at Tennessee in a divisional game? By the way, Joe, did you find the prices on Tampa?
Yeah, apparently they also have youth tickets there. I guess if you're a certain age, it doesn't say what that age is.
Is that a youth or a ute?
Utes. Okay. Did you say
Utes?
Utes. $17.50 ticket has gone to $15. $35 ticket is now $30. An $89 ticket is $75. They say the biggest savings is a family of four could buy season tickets on the 50-yard line and save $1,500. That's just under $400 a season ticket.
Well, they're in a very competitive marketplace over there with hockey and baseball. And aren't they building a new stadium? Are they working on getting a new stadium for the
They want to, but
the
so
not
far.
Done yet?
Okay.
Okay.
And have really struggled to put people in the seats with a team that hasn't been very, you know.
Well, they were competitive last year.
Right, hadn't been terrible.
No, absolutely. Washington's at Seattle. Here's one, New England and Philadelphia.
You just kind of see that it's hard to see the Patriots losing that one. That's one of those where they go, you know, when they go up against a team that's not quite right, they usually smell blood.
Denver is at San Diego. Who wants to attack this one?
I wish that game were like
the Sunday nighter.
Well, the Sunday night game, yeah, so we could see the whole thing. But these are local, so that's at San Diego, so we'll be able to watch that. That's 4:15 game.
Absolutely, for us it is.
Tim Tebow will be awful, and he will be great.
When you say awful, you mean?
Oh, he'll
throw the ball all over the place.
Yeah, and
but
then,
if the Chargers keep it close,
sure. Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, if it's a close game, you know, you got to give him credit. He figures out a way to win a close game if the team that they're playing is playing poorly.
Pittsburgh at Kansas City. We saw what Kansas City is. I mean, they've got a terrible quarterback situation now. And then, you know, here's the game of the weekend other than San Francisco-Baltimore, and that is the Giants are at New Orleans for Monday Night Football.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is a premium game for a Giants team that was surging after that win in New England and is now dropped a couple.
And that's the kind, you know, that's the kind of game since Tom's been with the Giants that they figure out a way to go win and stay in it, even though they probably shouldn't.
Just like New England.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Tom's teams have been, you know, sort of weird up there. They haven't been dominant. But, you know, it's one of those things that in November they go and they figure out a way to win that game.
All right. We have reached the end of this show. No? How much time we got left?
We're all ready to get out of here, man. It's Thanksgiving. Can we cut out early?
We'll let
I'm not even going to say it.
Jeff will give you some venison.
I was going to take a shot there.
I was going to take a shot, but it's Thanksgiving.
It's Thanksgiving, so we're going to avoid that. So who will you cook tomorrow?
No.
You don't dive into that for the holidays?
No, nobody wants any part of that.
Really? So what's the Osher Thanksgiving tradition?
We'll be at our sister-in-law's.
Oh.
Or my wife's sister.
Okay. So. Good cook?
We'll see.
Whoa. Hope she's not a listener.
We'll see.
John is laying
down.
Yeah,
we just moved back into town, so this will be the inaugural run.
So what you're saying is there's some pressure.
A little pressure. It might make the ozone if it doesn't go well.
Wow. Osh, that is harsh. Loggy, safe travels to you. How many dinners tomorrow?
Too many.
All right. Joe?
And the deer are scared.
Enjoy that ham.
WOKV AM Jacksonville, WOKV FM Ponte Vedra Beach.
AM 690 and 106.5.